You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Good afternoon. You're listening to Praxis. I'm your host, Taylor, and today I have an interview that I recorded this past week with two of our newest programmers here at the station, talking about their new feminist show, Just Us. Without further ado, here is that show. I will be back again with a live show next week. Welcome to Praxis. We are pre-recording this show in the studio on whatever day today is, and doing kind of a crossover show with one of our newest shows and some of our newest programmers, Autumn and Kevin from Just Us. You might listen to them on Sundays, just these last few Sundays. How long ago did you guys start?
We just did our third show.
Okay. So by the time this airs, you will have just done your fourth show. Cool. Awesome. And I guess whichever one of you wants to start, can you just introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about who you are and how you came to be hosting this show and how you've come to our little radio family?
I thought you were going to just cut it off at who you are and who you're supposed to be kind of thing.
Just go deep. Yeah.
This is Autumn. I moved to Spokane about 5 years ago, and you'll hear it in my voice. I'm from outside of Philadelphia, and so I have a funny accent that people like to make fun of. But, I moved here 5 years ago and got involved in the local community, really community organizing, a couple years ago with one of the women's organizations here in town. And Kevin and I talked about doing a podcast, and it kind of never came to fruition. Well, not kind of, like, it definitely didn't come to fruition.
Yeah, right.
And it was because we just didn't have the time, and editing is really difficult, and I wasn't going to do any of the editing, so that was all on Kevin. But when Jen and Jerry were kind of coming to the end of FES, they had heard about us wanting to do a podcast and approached us to see if we would want to do a radio show. And Kevin and I quietly cheered and jumped up and down without trying to look too desperate, you know?
I thought you'd never ask.
Yeah. No. So it's just a natural progression in that, you know, we've both been working in the same women's organization, and this just seemed like a perfect fit for us to kind of move into.
Cool. I can tell you that doing a radio show is the easy cheat way to do a podcast, because it's live, and then you can just say this is the podcast of a live show, and you cut out all the pesky editing. So
yeah. Wonderful. I like that part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
even though Kevin's still going to be doing the editing, but
yeah. A little bit.
Yeah. Well, how about you?
Yeah, so I'm Kevin. I'm from Spokane. I grew up in the Cheney area and have a house now on the South Hill. I met Autumn, like she said, through a feminist organization. I wanted to get involved to bring some more diversity to the group and help them get connected to the queer community. I always felt that the queer community has been very successful in its efforts for equality, and I thought that it would be a great fit for us to become more intersectional and build bonds throughout the community. So I started doing that, meeting with people, leaders in the community. I feel like I was able to make lifelong friends, people I'll know for the rest of my life. It's just the kind of bond that you only get between activists. And I met Autumn doing that, and she moved. How long were you in town before you joined on with us?
3 years.
You were in 3 years.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised I didn't meet you sooner.
Well, you mean then when I started?
Yeah.
I mean, I met you like right away.
Yeah, yeah.
But like right away when I started doing like the activism work. But until then, I mean, I just wasn't involved at all. Like,
you just went from 0 to 100 and...
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. 0 to 100. Mm-hmm. 0 to 60 and
yeah.
1.2
yeah, it was,
seconds or whatever.
It's been a crazy whirlwind the last 2 years. But yeah, we did want to start a podcast.
Sorry.
No, it's been fun. It's been a huge amount of fun. It's fun because, well, it's extra fun because life tends to be pretty depressing with politics, and it's great to have a group of people around you when certain things occur. So before the election, I already had a strong core group of people to help us crawl out of the corner and talk us through crying. And but I'm losing track here. But so, yeah. Oh, we wanted to do the podcast. Didn't quite work out. It just took way too much time. And this is way easier. And I enjoy that it's a community thing. It's not just us sitting in a weird audio tent
in my makeshift blanket. Yeah.
I went and got a bunch of piping, PVC piping, threw a bunch of blankets over it so we can get good sound. And then, yeah, it was kind of silly.
But now you have a blanket for it. So, yeah. So you said it's not just us, but obviously your show is called Just Us. Mm-hmm. And I guess we can talk a little bit about the intention for the show. Because as you said, Jen and Jerry, we miss you, F. Yes. And I'm sure listeners do, too. But they approached you. So it is a feminism-specific show. Mm-hmm. Yes, we kind of skipped right past that. So I guess what's your thesis statement for Just Us?
So, I mean, I think, you know, we've been doing a lot of work in the community regarding feminism, and especially intersectional feminism. And so we're able to bring the relationships that we've made and some of the things that we've learned into the studio and share it with a lot of people. I feel like a lot more people, actually, over the radio as opposed to kind of like the one-on-one meetings and things like that. We have, I mean, so I had a conversation with Carmen Pacheco-Jones and Angel. Angel, I forget your last name at the moment. But we talked about how the new jail would affect our community. You know, just some of the issues with the SRLJC, you know, where that's going. We've talked about sexual assault kits on the show already. We just did a show today about misogyny and the alt-right. So we really want to try and hit home on, you know, what feminism means specifically for Spokane and the Spokane area and our community. But, you know, we're going to do some light shows. I mean, last week we did, what did we talk about? Because I forget. It was our first show. Uh-huh. We talked about feminist heroes in like books and movies and TV. And next week we're going to make fun of like the Hallmark and Lifetime movies for Christmas. So, I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how much I love that stuff.
Yeah. But you love the Hallmark movies?
Oh, yeah. Like, love to make fun of it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely, my love is definitely
ironic. No judgment if it's, if it's real. But,
Yeah. When she told me about that, I attempted to watch one. I got through it. I took some notes. They tend to be, you know, ironically funny. But it was just me. My fiance will not watch them, so it's kind of painful to watch them on my own.
Yeah, well, so, like, I actually never watched them before, and my boyfriend was like, yeah, I watch these. And I was like, okay. So we were sitting there. I was like, yeah, like, I'll watch one. And we're sitting there watching it, and I realized, like, three quarters of the way through, I was just destroying it, just every second. And I turned to him, and I was like, hey, this movie that I'm crapping on, it's like, are you okay with that? Or is this like a movie that you actually like? He's like, yeah, this isn't a family that I want. Or, you know, I'm not watching this movie going, I wish this was me. And so I was like, okay. And I just started watching them more ironically than anything. And there's some amazing, amazing programming out there that is just, it's just too funny to watch. So that's what we'll be talking
about. So that's going to be your Christmas show. I need to come up with a holiday. I try to go light, but then it's so hard to make this show light. Right, even when I try, I'm just like, oh, this is going to be a downer. So it's nice to, I'll at least tune in.
So we'll try. I mean, we obviously, the sexual assault kits, I mean, that's, you know, a very dark subject. The misogyny and the alt-right is an extremely dark subject. But so, you know, we also want to be silly. I mean, we're silly people. So we want to make sure that, you know, on top of educating people about the issues and stuff, we get people get to know us too. Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah. And find that you're not like joyless, terrible feminist, right? That's right. That's the dominant stereotype.
We're definitely not stereotypical. Kevin is, but. Oh, man. It's. The other, one of the challenges of having a radio show is you can't swear. And both of us really find joy in swearing.
Yes.
And, you know, there are studies that show it's very healthy to swear, but we've done pretty good. Mm-hmm. There, we had a scare today, apparently.
Well, we had a near scare. Yes.
A close call.
Yeah.
Good thing she's next to the dump button. Yeah. She can hit it.
I didn't even need to hit it. I course corrected just fine.
Yeah. So with this show being a kind of activism-based show and like talking about action and everything, you both kind of mentioned that being your background. So do either of you want to share kind of your activism origin story, as it were?
I touched on mine a little bit. I always grew up feeling like injustice was always just eating at me all the time. And when I had a friend of a friend that was part of this organization in Spokane, and they were looking for new people to be on the board. And I saw it as an opportunity to reconnect with the queer community. I had not been connected to the queer community at all for many years. I felt like the group that I was hanging out with was maybe too toxic to be around. And I think since then, it's become more healthy with all of the progress as far as, you know, marriage equality and everything. I think people are now seeing that they can live more normal lives. And so I was able to meet normal gay couples, you know, all those people that were probably around but had been hiding the entire time I was growing up when I was young. So it was just an exciting thing to be a part of and really dive into the community. And I got to see a lot of old friends that I hadn't seen in a few years. And so when I got on with our organization, it wasn't long before Autumn came on. I think it was about a year, maybe half a year in. And they were looking for a change in leadership. So.
Well, I don't know if you were looking for it, but you got it.
Yeah.
That is how it happens.
So my origin story starts in November of 2016.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're like.
New. Very,
very. Not to sound patronizing, but like I feel like you've done a lot in that short period of time. So what about that moment? I mean, there's some obvious answers, but like what did that just kind of snap you into gear?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I was sitting there watching the election results roll in. And I mean, you know, it was kind of starting to roil and boil inside of me before that. I've always considered myself a feminist, though I don't know much about it. I don't know much about the scholars. I've never studied it. You know, it's just kind of something that lives within me. And when that happened, it was just a wake up call to, you know, we can't rely on other people to help us out. And so I felt like I needed to do something, but I didn't really know anybody in the community. So I asked the guy that I was dating at the time if he knew anybody, because he'd been here for a little while, and he hooked me up with Mariah. And so she's really helped me out a lot. And she just said, hey, show up to this one meeting. And I showed up to that meeting, and that's kind of all that happened. So I started getting involved in that organization in February and became the president in July, and have just been going like gangbusters since then. And so, you know, it'll be nice to start to slow things down a little bit, you know, and really kind of find my groove, especially with the radio show, because I'm super stoked about it.
Cool. Well, welcome.
Yeah, thanks.
Both to activism as a whole and to KYRS. Yeah, what do you think that, I guess this is for both of you, do you think that time period, I mean, it is such a line, like, I stopped doing my show for a while just after the election, and it wasn't directly related to that. It did make it significantly more difficult to do the show every week, because people were in such a panic, and I was kind of mad after, like, 5 years of being in a chronic panic, of just, like, now you're mad. But what do you think has changed? What do you think has taken shape in these 2+ years since that moment that kind of like jarred everyone so much in our country?
Yeah, well, I think the obvious one is the women's movement. It started right away, I believe, as a reaction to women seeing the type of man that had harassed them their entire lives come into the ultimate seat of power. And women figuring, well, if they can't punch up because you can't get to him, you can at least punch sideways and get to the people that are in your life. And so women got together. They started marching. It's become a huge movement. It's not stopping anytime soon. And then the other, like a Me Too movement and everything. And what are the other ones? What's the Time's Up?
Time's Up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's an obvious one. And I think it got a lot of people active. People didn't want to see. Well, they never thought this was going to happen. They never expected that it could happen. And I think that's where we screwed up, is thinking that, well, this can't happen. We can't have this type of person running the country. Yep. And then we were able to see our failures, where we've been screwing up in politics in general as liberals and progressives. And as you see from the last election, it's gone the right way finally. Finally got a break after 2 years.
If you call it a break. yeah, I mean, what Kevin said, I mean, the Women's March happened almost immediately, and that was just a visceral reaction to what had happened. And there were a lot of people that got involved that weren't involved previously, like myself. And that's an absolutely valid question to ask. Where were you? Because I was just blissfully ignorant about, not necessarily blissfully ignorant, but you know, thinking like, you know, I'm just one person, like there's nothing I can do. You know, there's, I don't know anybody. I don't know what to do. I don't know who to contact, you know, just like the normal kind of crap that like now that I'm an activist, like I get upset about. Right. Mm-hmm. So I totally get it. And that's a completely valid kind of thought. But yeah, I mean, just the amount of people that got involved and the amount of work that's been done in the last 2 years is incredible. I mean, all of the, like the diversity that just got elected this year, you know, there are, you know, there's representation from the LGBT community. There's, you know, just a ton of women. There's, you know, different religions. I mean, it's, if we keep going this way, then we're going to see a lot of really amazing things happen. We just need to stay the course and make sure that, you know, when we get a small defeat, you know, like in Spokane, we saw a defeat in that, you know, there were a lot of right wing people being elected this year, and we can't stop. We have to keep going. We have to keep marching on, protesting on, whatever it is you feel you need to do. As long as you're out there doing the work consistently, and not just marching one day a year and thinking everything's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another huge thing that I find is very important is the amount of racism that has been uncovered.
Blech.
Obviously, it's been around. It's been in the woodwork forever. But having this role model dog whistling, and I don't think all the time it's even a dog whistle. It's blatant saying.
It's like an air horn or something.
It's like I'm saying, I believe what you're thinking is okay. Join me. Let's do this. So all these people now just feel free to say, yeah, you know, I am racist, basically. And they find all these different ways of saying it. And then that's where we run into this misogyny as well, this other reaction to the women's movement, where we get the alt-right and misogynists together to create fun things like the Proud Boys doing all these weird things.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing, too. I think the only thing that, I mean, the only way to cure racism is to be talking about it. And we're talking about it more than I can ever remember talking about it. So I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Change is happening. It may not be in the ideal way, but it's changing. Things are changing.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of racism, I know that in Spokane, there's a lot of conversation happening around how do we heal the divide between white women and women of color. And that, I don't think, has been a conversation prior. And it's definitely a conversation that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some things happening, and there are people who are stepping up and trying to make change And I don't know that that would have happened if November 2016 hadn't happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis. I'm pre-recording in the studio with Autumn and Kevin from Just Us. You can hear them Sundays on KYRS at 1 o'clock. Good. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad I got that right. I was like, I didn't write that down. I better know it. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I feel like that has been a main positive, it's so hard to say, that outcome from the whole Trump kind of this rise. It's been a slow rise for a long time, mm-hmm. but this like overt rise of like the fascist right. I think a positive outcome has been that we're finally talking about this distinction between intersectional feminism, as you said, and white feminism. Mm-hmm. Maybe for listeners who aren't familiar with that, too, if you want to try to like summarize what that refers to.
You're better at it than me.
So intersectional feminism is, I mean, feminism in general is the basic thought that everyone, should be, everyone should be treated equal. Well, intersectional feminism basically says that, yeah, everyone should be treated equal, but we also have to lift the voices of and support those who have intersecting oppressions. And those intersecting oppressions are gender, race, sexual orientation, physical abilities, income, it runs a whole gamut of things. And so when we talk about intersectional feminism, we, Kevin and I want to make sure that we're not propping up white feminism, which is like, Lena Dunham.
Fired.
Yeah, which is a big problem I have. But white feminism is essentially centering it on middle class, able bodied, cisgender, hetero white women, which has been the case for since we thought about feminism, really. And so we're trying to change the narrative with that. And it was actually coined by, and I forget her name, but it was a woman doctor of color, and I forget her name, and I wish
who coined
I could
intersectionality, or
yeah,
Kimberly Crenshaw.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jeopardy, feminism round. For sure. And I think that the Clinton campaign brought out a lot of that, mm-hmm. and like the whole way it all went down was just like it was like someone wrote it so that we could all learn about this,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what do you guys, what do you both think, just in your time in Spokane locally? I mean, obviously you've talked about some of the topics of your shows so far, but what are the feminist issues in our region that people might not immediately think of as feminist issues or might not be thinking about at all?
Well, everything's a feminist issue when you mm-hmm. think about it through an intersectional lens. We have Camp Hope down at City Hall, which is a protest brought about to bring attention to the plight that people experiencing homelessness are having in terms of finding, warm shelter, finding food, finding resources, that kind of thing, that, not having a place to stay. And not being able to get our local government to pay attention. There are the sexual assault kits. There are issues with the police, There are the issues with the jail. I mean, there's just, it's everything, Taylor. Like, you can't look at a subject and, if you understand intersectional feminism, not see it through that lens, right?
Yeah,
and so that's why we're going to have so many topics on the show. And fortunately, we know a lot of people who are experts on these topics. We're not experts on
Mm-mm.
really much of anything.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
But we will like to have people on the show who will be experts and inform us and inform the community about mm-hmm. important topics. So if it's something like prison reform, we know people for that. So it's going to be fun, and we're just going to have to mix it up with some light stuff here and there, because it does get kind of tiring.
Yeah, it does.
When you're talking.
I can tell you, yeah. Yeah, and something I was curious about from you, Kevin, just I mean, I'm just making assumptions. You mm-hmm. know, you're living life in man world. Mm-hmm. And is it your connection to the queer community and that part of your identity that made feminism resonate with you? Were you raised up in feminism? Did you have to kind of come to it? Like, I just, yeah, I'm always curious about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. No, I wasn't raised in feminism. I just always thought about gender in ways that were abnormal to most people. And I think anybody that's trying to subvert gender norms immediately runs into something queer or feminist. Because when you think about feminists, they're trying to defy gender norms on their own. They're trying to not be persecuted at work for being too masculine or too feminine. You know, the same things that women fight against, queer people fight against all the time there. So that's where I found feminism made a lot of sense for me to focus on. I also appreciate the intersectionality too, because a lot of queer organizations, they basically just have one thing that they're focused on, which is totally fine. But I like what we're doing as focusing not only on the queer community, but people of color and immigrants and the homeless population. We want to be involved as much as we can in all of them. And we may not be experts on things, but we're learning the entire time we're doing these things. We're learning from the experts. And so it just makes us more rounded as activists, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you.
That's why it's nice to have a co-host.
Yeah.
Yes, you are correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess I'm curious. I mean, I'll listen to it. Hopefully I missed it because I was in a movie. But your conversation that you just had with Kate Bitz on misogyny and the alt-right kind of harkens back to a little bit of what I was asking you, is like this mm-hmm. issue of masculinity, not the issue of masculinity itself, but toxic masculinity and the way that that seems to be really cranked up in response to this surge of feminist presence. I don't know. Well, I guess what do we do about toxic masculinity, you guys?
Great question, Taylor.
Yeah, well, I think it's a reaction to people not wanting to see progress. They are misogynist. They see this women's movement in the last couple of years challenging their worldview. And there, even people within these groups, people of color who join these groups, they have to go through a certain amount of cognitive dissonance to comply with what these people are doing. And people do that in politics all the time. Think about gay people who vote Republican. They're like, I can, you know, put some of that under the rug as long as I vote like financially or fiscally conservative. But and just like Christians who support Trump, they're like, well, as long as he protects us, he can do whatever he wants in his personal life. And so going back to misogyny, I think one thing I wanted to talk about, we'll have another show about it, I'm sure, is just this juvenile reaction when you just want to get violent because you're not getting everything that you wanted. Mm-hmm. Or your privilege is being taken away from you in some way, or you imagine it is, because, I mean, you're a white man. Your privilege is right where it was before all of this happened. So, yeah, it's just, maybe we can have a psychologist on and talk about.
They're just kids that didn't learn how to share.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, because that's all that's being asked for is, you know, we want to have the same, you know, kind of access to things, and for whatever reason they feel like that's an assertion or a domination over them having their access, and that's absolutely not mm-hmm. what's happening. And so toxic masculinity, there are so many different variations of it. There's toxic masculinity, there's, you know, white women who are okay with white supremacy because it keeps them where they're at, you know. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that need to be discussed, and yeah, we're not experts, and I don't have the best ways to articulate that, so definitely having experts and psychologists, psychiatrists, mm-hmm. all of the people
mm-hmm.
on to talk about that kind of stuff would be excellent.
Yeah, I think there, in some ways, there's strength in not being an expert or not positioning yourself as an expert, because in some ways, like, that's what this moment has been so reflexively against too, mm-hmm. is like, oh, well, you're some snobby, you know, you learned feminist theory in college for 4 years and you don't know anything about the world. I think it's actually an advantage to you that you can say, actually, I'm just like a person who has been working and doing my life, and who cares about this because it affects my life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But
I think, yeah. And like in that toxic masculinity conversation, like I also want to have conversations with, you know, people in the community about what that means to not, you know, for men not to be able to have feelings or to be able to express them, you know, is that part of what the problem is? You know, is it part of that they're told that they have to kind of like quell that stuff, and, you know, is that them lashing out because they can't have those emotions and they can't have those feelings?
Yeah. You're saying that feminism might benefit everyone?
Possibly.
Yes. I'm definitely saying that the patriarchy hurts everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so since you're kind of setting out on this project that's all about having conversations, something I'm always curious about and I find myself constantly going back and forth on and like contradicting myself about is the best way to have these conversations. I was recently online and got sucked into this thread where someone had shared an article showing a study about exactly what you just said, white women tacitly supporting white supremacy, looking at the midterm elections, showing, you know, voting for people like Ted Cruz, you know, in Texas, and that still, just as they did in the Trump election, the majority of white women who are voting are voting for these right-wing candidates.
Yep.
So it said, most white women are fine with white supremacy. That was the headline. And there, it was an explosion of, like, pearl-clutching and not my white women and not me and this and that. And, you know, I feel like I tried a few different angles to get in there, and it's so difficult. I guess, do either of you have success stories about broaching these conversations, either with maybe with men or with women, and probably specifically white women in this case?
No. No, there are no success stories. Not that I have, anyway. But I did, and these are some things that I kind of want to apply to that sort of conversation. But I just took a workshop, and it was essentially the facilitator said two very striking things to me. The first was that being called a racist is the second worst thing that you can call someone other than being a pedophile. And so, you know, as soon as someone feels as though they're being called a racist, because they're not explicitly racist, they're automatically going to shut down or get defensive or both. And then the other is to just kind of like help people understand that, no, you didn't create this. No, you didn't start this. No, you didn't ask for it. But you need to figure out how to dismantle those systems that were put in place so that this kind of stuff no longer happens. So those are two things that I'm going to kind of start putting into those. Because, I mean, honestly, Taylor, like, I get into those things and I just want to rip people apart. Like, that's, I mean, I just want to go in and start, you know, Hulk smash, you know?
Mm-hmm. Relatable. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's really difficult for me to understand, you know, like, how people, you know, it's just like when there's somebody that says, well, not all men. It's like, it's the same argument. Yeah, of course it's not all men, but that's not what we're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if it doesn't apply to you, then you shouldn't be offended by it. You know, if I'm reading something that says white women, you know, white women did this, I'm like, okay, well, that's not me. But let me understand what this article is saying, or let me understand this. Like, I don't get offended by it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. I haven't had a successful one yet.
Well, I think that just because you're racist doesn't make you a bad person. It just makes you a person. And I think that... actually, Bob the drag queen said something the other day, which is pretty, I mean, a lot of people aren't going to like, but I agree with it, is that all white people are racist. You're raised to be racist from the beginning of your life till the end. Everything around you, from media to privilege, builds racism mm-hmm. into you. And I think everybody just needs to acknowledge that. I think you just need to have discussions about privilege. And I think that a lot of people around here, it's a mostly white area, have never had the opportunity in their entire life to have somebody be like, let's talk about why you have privilege over a person of color. And, I mean, go to North Idaho. It's 95%. We're pretty white here, too.
It's like 89 here, 88. Yeah.
But, yeah, we've had good discussions with family members, and just having the conversation helps because they've never had it before. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not going to make them not racist, but they'll think about it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, like both of you just said, like putting it in the context that this is a structure that you're part of, whether you want to be or not. And I think a lot of people, particularly in this area, because it's so racially isolated and isolated in general, is that people think like racism is like having bad thoughts, you know, and it's like being a mean person. Mm-hmm. And that's such a small fraction of what it is. It can just be like existing in your daily life with undue access to things.
Yeah, you're like, predetermined to have a bias toward white people and away from people of color. That's just the way you were raised if you were white.
Yeah.
So you don't have to get crazy because somebody calls you out on something you say. You know?
Yeah, I mean, everybody has implicit bias, right? So, I mean, it's the sooner that we acknowledge that, like, yeah, no, you're not explicitly racist. You're not, you know, saying racist things. You're not doing racist things. But there are little kind of, you know, for lack of a better word, microaggressions that happen, you know, that we all do. And we just have to understand what that is and realize, you know, that we need to course correct and, you know, kind of fix it going forward. I mean, that's, it's really, it's not. Is it that difficult?
It's really not. It's just, oh, wow, I crossed the street just because I saw a person of color coming. Why did I do that?
Mm-hmm.
Or why did I look at my purse? You know?
Yeah.
You just think about those things. It doesn't make you a bad person, but like you said, correct as you move along.
Mm-hmm.
Become a better person for it.
Yeah. And if you actually get called out for something, I feel like that's a compliment. Like if a person directly says, hey, what you did was messed up. That's why I think it's so important, like you said, that this conversation is finally slowly starting to happen on a local level, being led by, you know, women of color, as which is really the only way it could happen, in my opinion. I think that's such a compliment. Like when that's happened to me, I've just been like, oh, thank you for caring enough and like seeing my intention enough and taking the time and effort to like put in. Like, I just take that as a compliment when that happens, because it's like that person could easily just never say anything to you and then just put you in the bin of like people not to be trusted and like never talk to you again, you know? So like, take it. It's a gift. I don't know. I guess in the last little chunk that we have of time, what are you guys the most excited to do with this show? Like, what's your vision for it, or do you have like a pet topic that you're most excited to get into?
Well, I think the until it's finished, the sexual assault kits are going to be something that we're always going to be talking about.
Yeah.
And so the first episode was just kind of like a 101 on where we're at now in Washington State and how we can move forward. So we're excited to have people on about that, people from SANE, SART. We'll probably get a phone interview with Tina Orwell, who's a legislator from the other side of the state. She's amazing. Oh, that would have been my answer. So if you asked me who my feminist hero was, it was going to be that.
Nice.
Somebody asked us that the other day. I'm like, I don't know. I don't have one. Does it make me bad?
Yeah. And can you, maybe just for people who didn't catch that or don't know what you're talking about with these kits, can you just give like a little soundbite?
So soundbite is... we didn't start trying to get... There's a backlog, basically. So there's a backlog that has been kept in at police departments and other places that have not been tested. And they go back to the 80s. And we started with around 10,000. We're down to like 6,000. And we just need to get the funding for labs and lab technicians to finish that off. And why it's important is because, for me, one of the main reasons why it's important is because that DNA gets put into CODIS and you can start finding serial rapists. And in Detroit, they found over 800 serial rapists from their 10,000 kits around the country. So that's huge. And we know what the Northwest is notorious for when you think about Jeffrey Dahmer and people like that. So imagine what we could find. But yeah, do you want to elaborate any more on that?
Well, locally here, we have almost 1,000 kits as of from 2017 and going back. So for 2018, we don't know how many kits are here. But the issue is there's many layers to the issue, and most of it is funding. I mean, it all boils down to money, right? But the issue is that we're constantly finding money for other things. I mean, how much do the football coaches make? for UW and WSU. I mean, it's a lot of money, right? That money right there, like the 1 year salary, probably like the, you know, bonuses, all that kind of stuff, like that could pay for all these kids. Mm-hmm. So essentially, like the message that our legislators have been sending and our police departments have been sending, and this isn't just specific to Spokane, this is across the entire country. The message that they've been sending is, we don't care about you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We don't care about you, and we don't care about the next people that are going to be victimized. And it also says that, go ahead, have free reign over whatever it is you'd like to do. You want to rape? You want to kill? Go ahead, because we're not ever going to test that DNA. So have at it. Let's see how many you can get away with, basically, is what they've been saying. Yeah, and so for us, I mean, that's the big crux of why we're so passionate about this issue, is because it affects so many people. And this is one of those absolutely intersectional issues. Mm. It is nonpartisan. It affects people of every age, every color, every gender. I mean, it's just across the board affects everybody. And it isn't until recently that people started caring.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it also affects people now and in the future whose kids aren't even there, because if you think back to the Kavanaugh hearings and everything, and when Why I Didn't Report went viral, people know this. People know that they're going to go through a traumatic interview process with police, you know.
Even at the hospital, if you don't have a trained SANE nurse to help you out, you the process that you're going to go through at the hospital is not going to be good.
Yeah. And people know that. And they know, like, oh, then this is just going to sit in a dusty box for 30 years. So why would I bother? Right. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm never going to see justice. Even if I do go get the kit done, even if they test it, even if they get a hit on it, even if the police decide to, or even if, you know, they decide to recommend it to the prosecutor to be prosecuted, even if they prosecute it, like, I mean, the numbers go down drastically. I think it's like, it ends up being like there are three convictions out of every 1,000 kits that are tested. Like, that is just, I don't even know what the word is for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, the numbers are just staggering in terms of, you know, and I don't know. It's just ridiculous. I can't even.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah.
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 But we don't want to discourage people from reporting.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
We just need to let people know that there is progress being made here, and that please report and just encourage people.
Mm-hmm.
That's
And it's because of, yeah, people agitating that they're getting.
And that we have amazing advocates in this area. I mean, we've got Lutheran Community Services, which are amazing. And they're just always available to help someone through the process from start to finish. I mean, you can call them like right after you've been assaulted, and they'll go with you. You know, they have a trained nurse, and they'll go with you to the hospital, and they'll help you throughout the entire. I mean, Kevin and I sat in on the Ennis trial, and we saw members of Lutheran Community Service there, you know, in support of the survivor. And so it's just they're a fantastic organization here in the community to help people through that. And then there's the Spokane SART Foundation, which SART stands for Sexual Assault Response Team. And they're working on training more nurses to be SANE trained, which is Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And they can, it's a lot more compassionate.
Mm. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to go back and hear that show when you get your podcast set up. If you're just joining us at the end of the show here, you're listening to Praxis. I'm talking with Autumn and Kevin from Just Us. You can hear them here on KYRS Sundays at 1, starting about a month ago and going hopefully long into the future. Was that also, that was Kevin's answer in terms of what he's looking forward to engaging on this show. You're obviously passionate about it too.
Yeah.
Do you have like a dream guest or?
I think I'll be really excited when we have Tina Orwell on.
Yeah,
we fangirled about her when we met her a couple times. But I think the other issue that I'm really excited or, you know, really interested to get into is the sexual trafficking and the difference between sex trafficking and sex work.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that a lot of people understand what that difference is. So really interested and excited to start that conversation and then hopefully have in the Jonah Project, which they are the organization in town, along with the City of Spokane Human Rights Commission, working on that issue.
Yeah, it's really undercovered, that topic of sex trafficking in Spokane, and I think more people need to be aware of what's going on around them. So I'm looking forward to getting that show done sooner rather than later.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I got the link.
It seems like the information out there that is about it is incomplete so much of the time, and then we get this terrible federal legislation passed that, you know, criminalizes so much sex work and puts people in more danger, and there's just layers and layers and layers.
Yeah, I did see a video by the founder of the Jonah Project talking about how the news covered a house that they busted, which is a house where they were being sex trafficked, but they covered it as a massage parlor, which implies more towards prostitution rather than sex trafficking. So he was pretty upset about that.
Yeah,
it's a discussion that needs to be had.
Yeah. And then I guess just in the last couple of minutes we have, since I missed this show, but I was like following your Facebook thread, I didn't hear your answers about who your like pop culture feminists were.
Oh.
Both of you. Because I just know that I feel like representation is so important.
Yeah.
And that's a conversation that's happening. But like.
My favorite, most recent, feminist heroes in media, in fictional media, we were talking about, were the women of Black Panther.
Yeah, I was going to say Danai Gurira.
Mm-hmm.
Or yeah, I think that's how you pronounce your name. Yeah, she's also in, well, she's in Black Panther. She's also in The Walking Dead. And she's amazing in all of those roles. I like that she chooses feminist roles, but she's also a playwright who writes feminist roles. So that's why I really appreciated her.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote in Zimbabwe and South Africa and Liberia, and also had some plays on Broadway here. So she's just a really exciting person all around, and I love her characters a lot.
Yeah. Nice. And, you know, I grew up with Wonder Woman. I mean, I had the underoos. You know, I was into it. And, you know, I watched her on TV, and I just thought she was amazing. And when the movie came out, I was so disappointed. I was like, oh, this is going to be so great. And then I got so disappointed because the movie centered around her interactions with a man.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And, you know, we got, what, maybe 10, 15 minutes on the island, you know, showing like.
I would have wanted a whole movie of the island.
Right.
I'm going
right?
to be real. That's something I would watch. That's like. Xena with good production value,
yeah.
Like time,
mm-hmm.
something else, like
yeah. And then like, and I didn't know much about Black Panther, and I went to Black Panther, and I think my like, I you know, I was constantly lifting my jaw up, going, these are the women,
mm-hmm.
and there's three of them, and they're sharing space, and they're supporting mm-hmm. each other, and they're actually acting like the way that we want people to act towards us and with us. And And it was just, like, to me, that was so special. And it felt like, it felt very rare. And I loved the fact that there were women of color doing that and, you know, kind of sending that message to us. And it just made me so happy to see that on screen. And so, like, for me, like, the women of Black Panther are just way more of a feminist hero than the Wonder Woman movies that we're seeing come out.
I remember people were excited about those movies, but it just doesn't compare at all to Black Panther. Black Panther is the best.
And not for nothing, spoiler alert, but Chris Pine dies at the end of Wonder Woman. How are they bringing him back for the second one?
Wait, they are. What?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because what? Because Wonder Woman can't carry the movie herself?
Mm. They're contractually obligated to have at least one famous Chris in every film.
Yeah.
So that's part of it.
Which Chris is it going to be?
Is it Chris Pine or Chris Evans?
Yeah.
Hemsworth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What were some of your favorites from other people? Or what were like surprising ones? Like characters maybe you didn't consider feminist icons who other people saw something in? Such a weirdly specific question. Sorry.
Exciting. One that I didn't watch Buffy that much, but it was one that was hard to. A lot of people said Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and I was not that knowledgeable about it to talk enough about it. But well, I did like the show.
Yeah, it's funny because you know a lot of people said Buffy and Willow and you know honestly like the person that I identified the most with on Buffy was Anya.
I do love, yeah. There's, I mean, it's chock full.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm a faith girl myself.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Okay. Also, gay icons galore.
Mm-hmm.
Just
mm-hmm.
not to just turn this into a Buffy plug, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Somebody told me that we should have mentioned Carol from The Walking Dead, which I think she's probably even more feminist than the other characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but there was, you know, like all of the women from like every Jane Austen novel.
Mm-hmm.
Or like the Golden Girls.
The Golden Girls, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
We had so many, like I just can't even remember. Yeah. I have a terrible memory.
I think those were all my favorites, though.
Yeah. And then just in the final moments that we have, I always like to try to invite people into action in some way. So if there's like one thing this week that you could recommend people do for the cause, like what's a good starting point for folks who are maybe like, I just wish I could do something, but I don't know what to do.
I'd like to get people going. I don't have my notes, but you can find the Jonah Project, and they have a physical space now where you can get swag. If you donate money, you can donate clothes. Look up the jonahproject.org for more information on them.
The Spokane Community Against Racism, or SCAR, is heavily involved in the criminal justice system. And so I would, if I could, encourage people to check them out on social media. They have a website, which is scarspokane.org. And there's a lot of really great information regarding the disproportionate impacts that our criminal justice system here in Spokane County has on people of color.
Great. Cool. Well, thank you both so much for coming and talking to me right after your show. A double header.
Oh,
it's wonderful. We're doing like multiple shows a week now. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
That would just be doing one.
I need to figure out how to start getting paid for doing this.
Right. Yeah, thank you so much.
Tell me when
you
figure it out. Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah.
Taylor.
Yeah. All right. And if you're just joining us at the end and you want to hear any of the beginning of the show, you can find the podcast either by going to kyrs.org, looking up shows/praxis. You can also go directly and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, all the rest by searching Praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S. Or you can go directly to soundcloud.com/praxisradio and find the feed there. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week.